I'm Aaron Barsky from UBC. This is Cerebral, visualizing multiple experimental conditions on a graph with biological context. Today I'm going to tell you about a project I did with some microbiologists and systems biologists at UBC. And it's really fun working with biologists. They're drowning in mountains of data. They don't know how to interpret it. They're desperate for visualizations, and what they're studying with is relatively primitive. So you give them almost any visualization and they praise you like a god. If you ever want to feel like a hero, go collaborate with a biologist. This is where they were starting from. The systems biologists got pretty excited about these graph models as a way to model what's going on inside a cell, and so they've been using those for a few years. But then it turns out they've got just mountains of other data, measurements about proteins in cells, text descriptions of what's going on with each of these proteins. So our goal was to get all of that text data into a visual form onto the visualization, and then secondarily, to help out with this graph representation and customize it a bit more for biology. And so we created Cerebral. It's an interactive exploration tool. It visually displays multiple experimental conditions. It makes it easy to compare between conditions, and it has a new graph layout algorithm that uses biological metadata. So I'll give you the brief overview of systems biology, go over the related work. We'll talk about how we made a visualization in coding choices, short 30-second video, how the community liked it, and future work. So on the left there, we've got life inside a cell. And inside a cell, you've got lots of chemicals all smashing into each other. It's really densely packed. There's barely any room. But what makes life life is that every time a chemical collides is that it doesn't react, but they have specific binding sites and interaction sites, and interactions in that chemical soup are actually very rare. So you can take this big jumble, this chemical mess, and model it as a nice graph. So in a systems biology graph, your nodes tend to be proteins, but they can also be other chemicals, genes, DNA, RNA, tRNA, mRNA, other stuff like that. And then if they are shown to interact, you connect them with an edge. Easy enough. And these graphs are great because they can summarize everything that we know about biology. They tend to be extracted from databases. And so if we've got a line that says TLR4 interacts with TYRAP, it's because some exploited PhD student lived in poverty for 4 years studying these two proteins and eventually came to the conclusion that, yes, they interact, and wrote a paper about it. Lots of information in these graphs. But they're dynamic. There's no summary source. Basically, anytime someone publishes a paper, anytime someone discovers anything, the graph updates with our newfound knowledge. So computer tools to explore them are very useful. When you're going to create the graph yourself by mining a database, you get your choice of what scope you're going to work with. At a simple scope, you might just choose proteins associated with your target of interest. In this case, we're looking at TLR4. It sits on the surface of protein, detects bacteria, starts to cascade, that creates bacteria fighting agents. This is the kind of scale where you already pretty much know what's going on. The reason you're drawing the diagram is to share that knowledge with your peers. It's really simplified, but hopefully it communicates the processes very quickly. Not very realistic, though. This is more realistic. This is the whole immune system, where TLR4 is just a tiny little section inside it. And as you can see, it's not isolated. It communicates with the rest of the immune system. This is the truth. And this is the kind of scale we were hoping for, large enough to be realistic, but still manageable to work with. What's not manageable to work with would be to take every single protein we know exists in the human cell and all their known interactions and display it as one big graph, though maybe at InfoViz 2018 that will prove to be a lie. So there's this continuous cycle. They use the model to summarize what they already know. They go out, they do wet lab experiments, they interpret those experiments in the context of the model, and refine their model further. Let's get right to a concrete example. We partnered with the Bob Hancock Lab, the microbiology lab at UBC. They've got this drug, LL37, which they think is going to be amazing to reduce inflammation. It's not part of the graph model as it is. So they go out and do science. They split cells into two groups, treat some with LL37, leave the controls untreated, expose everyone to bacteria, and then they use a detection technology, like microarrays, to look inside the cell and see what's going on. Now let's show you the results in our tool, Cerebral. This is going to take a minute because this slide looks pretty complicated at first. So the graph model we've chosen is TLR4. That's that surface protein that detects incoming bacteria. And we've replicated the graph 8 times, once for each of the 4 time points we measured, and in the 2 conditions with the drug and without the drug. And then the layout of the graph is the same in each one of these conditions, but the color is different. Red means a lot of a certain protein's being created, green means less of it's being created. And so the first thing you're going to notice when you look at this is you're like, wow, that's a noisy data set. And this is a fact of life with biology. You're measuring things that are micrometers wide, so you do get a lot of noise. But when you look at the global picture, you find you actually get a lot of information. So at hour one, we look at the 2 conditions, and okay, some proteins are turned up, some proteins are turned down, no big deal. In hour two, there's not much difference between the drug and untreated, but compared with hour one, we see a lot more red proteins. The immune system's getting started, lots of proteins are being activated to go out and fight infection. The interesting result happened at hour four. In the drug treatment case, all of a sudden the reaction turned down, everything's calming off, you're not getting the same flood of cytokines, things are nice and green and calm, whereas in the untreated condition, the infection's raging out of control, and the immune system's fighting like mad. And then a day later, everything's returned to normal. It looks a lot like hour one all over again. So the small multiples view is one window in our tool. And you'll notice that a lot of what they're doing is to compare different conditions. How does a drug compare with a control? How does one time point compare with another time point? And because these back and forth comparisons are so common, we also let the biologists just choose 2 time points, and then they can get a direct computed difference showing everything that's actually changed between the 2 conditions shown in the main view. We also have a parallel coordinates view to have a look at the raw data assisted by some clustering algorithms to help you out. I'll just take a moment to notice some of you might see a red-green color scale and panic and say, what about all those poor colorblind users? Well, a lot of them drop out of biology, but more importantly, We let the user choose whatever color scale they wanted, but then we started with a gallery of perhaps better color scales, so we don't let non-infoviz people make a mess of their graphs. They can choose with some recommendations about what's appropriate. Okay, well, so as I say, systems biology has been around for a while. We're not the first people to make a graph viewer for systems biology. In fact, there's lots of biology-specific systems, including Cytoscape, VisAnt, GeneSpring, and GenMap. VisAnt desperately needs some particle point-based labeling. But in addition to just the sort of not really too usable aspect of these tools, the main problem was that even though they're biology specific, they weren't customizing the graph with biological context. They also were limited to only showing one experiment result at a time. We also borrowed heavily from the multiple coordinated view, things like SpotFire, Hierarchical Clustering Explorer. But these didn't have the graph view, and as I say, the graphs got almost all the information there is to know about biology. All right, so on to the design decisions. We've got as input, we've got a graph, set of nodes and edges, descriptive metadata, some labels, some biological attributes, whole bunch of float values, and then we can make any graphical representation we want. We're InfoViz practitioners. We chose to use a graph layout guided by biological metadata, have small multiple views for the multiple experimental conditions, and a parallel coordinates view for a measurement-driven view, and I'll tell you why. So we didn't go too crazy with the graph view. They'd already been using circles for nodes, lines for edges. We decided to stick with this fairly common convention now. And if you've ever looked at the proceedings for a graph drawing conference, there's hundreds of graph layout algorithms. Surely the biologists would like one of them. No, they hate them all. Why is that? And it's a bit of a subtle point here, but maybe it's an important point to think about when you're doing design studies. You know, we saw part of our input was a graph. We're like, hey, we know how to draw graphs, graph drawing. And we went and laid out graphs. Biologists, they had different priorities. They said, well, we know lots about all these proteins. We've got databases, information, lots of internalized knowledge. Some of those relationships happen to form a graph, but that's not really a priority. That's not what we're interested in. The graph structure isn't our main focus. What they want to see is the cell structure. If you'll remember from grade 10, biological cells are divided into regions by physical membranes. This keeps proteins apart that shouldn't interact, increases reaction rates within a compartment. And through a process called subcellular localization, most proteins are transported into a specific compartment. So if you ever open a biology textbook and look at how they draw diagrams, they have all the proteins that are outside the cell at the top, then they have a thin band for those sitting on the surface of the protein, all the proteins floating around in the cytoplasm, and the nucleus at the bottom. That is how they always place their proteins on the page. We wanted to make sure that this spatial encoding, we did it too. So we had a graph layout that restricts proteins to bands based on the subcellular localization. This stops the confusion of biologists would look at a normal graph layout and say, oh, look, TNFAIP1's right by NF-kappa-B2, but I know they're separated by three physical membranes. Why are they sitting side by side? I don't understand your visualization at all. I quit. Actually, no, I said at the beginning, working with biologists is fun. It is, I promise. So the spatial position reveals the location in the cell. How did we do this? We just went very simple. We used a simulated annealing search with a flexible scoring function. Simulated annealing is notoriously slow, often cubic. We used an approximation to reduce the speed to order E root V. The great thing about this algorithm, you can implement it in 2 hours in an afternoon. It's really simple to implement, but it gives you, the InfoVis person, control over where you're placing nodes. You can set limits and constrictions. See the paper for algorithmic details. Okay, point number two, small multiple views for experimental conditions. So we have multiple measurements, 8 different measurements for each of these proteins. We decided we would just replicate the graph each time and color each node according to the condition. So what were some of the alternatives? Well, one of the alternatives was to use animation. Yesterday we were bashing open source, today we'll bash Microsoft. This laptop isn't mine, it's got PowerPoint 2008. It doesn't recognize my animation from PowerPoint 2003. Which is a pity, because this was a really compelling example. Imagine, if you will, a blinking star field of hundreds of nodes changing colors all at once, and you looking aghast going, oh, what's changing? It's really hard to track hundreds of different points at once as they move about. You'll have to trust me on this. Or maybe trust some research that says that visual memory is much worse than we expect it to be, and it can be quite difficult to follow animations compared to static comparisons. The major alternative that people use a lot is to just embed a chart within the node, so you have all the measurements as some sort of glyph inside the node. Well, this is great if you're zooming in really close, you can see all the details, but then you zoom out and your charts disappear. The authors of this paper, they noticed that their charts disappeared, so they actually just said, well, let's just pick one measurement and we'll color according to that, which is why you can see anything at all in this view. Finally, we included parallel coordinates because, again, it was already being used by biologists. Each experimental condition is an axis. Each node, all the measurements are aligned that cross the axis points at the measured values. And people used to really like to use, well, people still do, use clusters. The hypothesis is that if a bunch of proteins are changing their expression level in coordinatedly together, maybe they share a same function. Maybe they're being controlled by the same driving set of forces. The problem, of course, is that biological data is really noisy, super noisy, and clustering algorithms tend to be sensitive to noise. But even more importantly, the machine learning guys go out and they improve the clustering, which you think would be a good thing, but then a biologist says, well, last year's clustering algorithm gave me this result, the years before gave me this result. Every clustering algorithm tells me something different. Well, what do I do with this? Well, you combine it with linked views, and all of a sudden you can see something, if hopefully. Okay, so here's the system in action in small resolution. So we've got a number of different measurements in the small multiple views. It looks a lot better when it's at higher res. But what we're going to do is use the parallel coordinates to try and find an interesting feature. We just use k-means clustering, so we just change the k-slider. We eventually find a clustering that produces something interesting, a sinusoidal pattern in the data. Hey, we spot that. We click on it, and we find, okay, a cluster contains some signal and some noise. But when we look at the linked graph view, we see that, in fact, some of the selected nodes not only are related by clustering, but they're related because they interact, and we've got evidence that their edges interact. Selecting just those nodes, we find much tighter clustering, and we can watch this coordinated pattern of these group of 6 histones coordinating to rise and fall in context. Okay. Adoption. So we were sneaky. We chose the previously best use tool cytoscape. This was really popular with systems biologists. We ripped out all its guts and replaced almost everything with our own renderer, the biologically based graph layout, but we adopted their community and we let cytoscape do all the database work of importing data and doing the model and attribute management. Just last year, we released in a two-page application note, we just announced this graph drawing layout without all the linked views. Now we've got everything released. But some of this works, so immediately, the moment we released the new graph drawing, biologists in the biology community started using it to generate diagrams. They were desperate for this view of their data. They started using it immediately, which was really satisfying to see the work in print in a non-InfoViz journal. It's great to see it in an InfoViz journal too, don't get me wrong. And then our collaborators, they had this pilot project called InnateDB. They went out and they hand-curated. They read thousands of papers and made a customized database of proteins involved in innate immunity. And now there's a little button that says when you do a database query, click on the Cerebral link and you get visualized data, not just a table of results. They thought that this improved their database compared to all the competitors so much that they even included us as authors on the paper. That was nice. So future work, as I've already said, I hope someone will tackle visualizing everything that goes on inside a human cell all at once, but that's pretty ambitious. We just chose k-means clustering because it's easy, but there are biology-specific clustering algorithms that'll just rip right out and plug right in once we choose a good one. Perhaps the most significant thing, and I think it's a problem with almost any visualization, but it's more apparent once you start talking to biologists, is that there could be a data mining bias. We're exploring a data set. We don't have a hypothesis. You're going to see some sort of pattern if your data set is large enough. This is the data mining bias. Biologists aren't even aware of the data mining bias. They don't really... some of the biologists aren't aware of it. So the question is, when you see a pattern, is it a signal? Is it noise? It would be really nice if we had some sort of confidence meter as people are exploring that says, okay, you're interested in this subset. How big is it? What are the connectivity? How many experiments are involved? Is this likely to be statistically significant, or are you just noise mining? I'd like to talk to a statistician to figure out exactly how to do that. And so that's it. The conclusions. It's cerebral. We chose data representations familiar to the systems biology community. And by making an interactive tool, we replaced a lot of side-by-side printout static image comparisons with interactive exploration of multiple experimental conditions. We used biological metadata to guide the graph layout, and it's been adopted by biologists as a tool to analyze microarray data sets. Thanks for everyone who helped out on this project.
Hi, I'm Cecilia Aragon from Berkeley Lab, and this is great work. It's nice to see the combination, somebody else working in the combination of information visualization and scientific visualization. I really enjoyed your story as well as what it's like working with biologists. And I want to invite everybody here as well. At Berkeley Lab, we have a lot of scientists with huge data sets that I think would really love to see some of these tools implemented. The problem we have is a shortage. We have lots of interesting problems, but not enough people to work on it. So if anybody wants to work with interesting data, scientific data sets, talk to me. And thank you very much.
I have a question for you. I'm interested in the clustering tool that you have, and in particular how the biologist made use of it. Did you find that they actually do use that tool?
I don't know. I haven't actually had a lot of feedback directly how people are using it aside from the end reports of publications appearing out there in the community. It's a good starting point. Sometimes if you just have no idea in a data set what you're looking for, it's a great place to start. I would imagine our K-clustering is still a little just too noisy on its own to go straight to the answers, but I hope it's a starting point for the browsing of the visualization. Start with a cluster and see what's related in the rest of the visualization.
I have a reference comment and then a question about the biological diagram. So I worked at MathWorks on the systems biology toolkit, and you might want to look at that because it has a lot of the properties of the things you're talking about, but it's not open source, so it maybe there's some screenshots you can look at, and if not, I can probably hook you up with something you could look at. The thing we discovered when we were working on that for biologists, and we had all the entertaining conversations with biologists that you obviously had, those pictures that you showed that they hand draw, and you rightly pointed out that there's a lot of stuff in those pictures that's not just network, it's about the cell, the membrane, and all of that. But there were some interesting things about the visual style of those that we found in conversation. The biologists seem to like that sketchy, artistic, lots of color, things that we wouldn't normally do in an InfoViz graph layout, things that looked hand-drawn. They seem to have a kind of an interest in looking cartoony. And so at least at MathWorks, we were working on a visual style for things that they could upload their own icons and things, and so that they could sort of brand or, you know, convey a kind of a color and visual style to those pictures. Yours still looks a little bit institutional, even if it's showing up in articles that
Absolutely.
They write.
I had a very similar experience. I once presented the work, and Bob looked at it and said, why are they squares? I said, well, they could be circles. They're like, yeah, make them circles, you know. Okay. And then they also, you know, had this very strong convention that I'm not going to find my picture, but that the band of the cell surface should be colored as a layer and that things should span this layer. And these seemed like very trivial things to me, but it seemed important to them. I found the system biologists were willing to work with my institutional code for exploration, but when they went to publish, a lot of them did say, we want a diagram editor, something that really did let them sketch and cartoon and add annotations. It'd be great to integrate that all as one. So,
thanks very much.
Thanks.